Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Get Booked podcast, sort of. And this is our semi-new reading recommendation experiment, Human versus Algorithm. We are recording on September 27th. I'm Jen Northington. I'm here with Vanessa Diaz, and we're coming to you from Book Riot. Vanessa, welcome back.
Hello, here I am.
I know you helped kick off the experiment, and now you're back.
It was only a matter of time.
It's true. It's very true. So if you've not been listening along, we're trying out some changes with the format of this show. And how it works is we are going into the Get Booked recommendation request form and email to find four listener questions. And then one of us picks like a personalized, a human recommendation for that question. And the other one researches it using some kind of book recommendation algorithm to find what the algorithm thinks is a good pick. And then we talk about how that went and what we think about it. And Vanessa, you've done regular Get Booked.
Yes, I've done regular Get Booked.
And you've done this.
Yep.
Yeah. So like, what did you think? How was it? How did it go?
This is really hard. It shouldn't
is
be.
It?
Well, okay. It's not that it's really hard. It's funny because having done Get Booked, which is obviously a more robust in that like you're, you know, doing recommendations for everybody. So, you know, that's obviously, I guess, a little bit more effort and work. By hard, I don't mean effort so much as I think you've talked about with, I know for sure on the Erica episode, it's really hard to completely let the algorithm do the work for you. And that was the part that I struggled with. So again, not hard as in like, this was difficult for me. But it was like, okay, no, just go with what the algorithm said. Like, don't do too much researching or like too much whittling out.
Right.
But then I still wanted to some extent, because there's a person on the other end of this question that like wants a recommendation. So yeah, that was the one like kind of challenge, I guess, for me.
Yeah, I think we've all found that to be very true, is that like, oh, but the algorithm is wrong. But it's the algorithm, so I'm supposed to. How much fiddling can I do? Yeah. It's that's a real prep problem for this show, which I think is fine. Like, I think that's fine. I think it's interesting, right? Like, it's an interesting problem to tackle. So,
and then weirdly, I ended up kind of getting lucky where like the algorithm wasn't completely wrong on mine, so that was like a nice wrinkle. So anyway, we'll get into
that. Yeah. I was going to say, we'll talk more specifics when we get them. But it is always nice when you're like, oh, that's not a terrible recommendation.
Exactly.
I don't hate that result.
The interwebs are helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Every now and then they don't do a bad job. And that's a nice surprise. Let's see. Oh, right. We have some feedback. So listeners writing in, we have Andrea who says, I just listened to the latest episode where a woman wanted books about someone attending law school. I'm surprised that none of the algorithms came up with the most obvious choice, The Paper Chase. It's been a movie as well as a TV series, but first it was a book. I've never read the book, but I enjoyed both the movie and TV series, and it's still available as an ebook. Thank you, Andrea. And then Amanda writes in with a suggestion for a question that Danica and I really struggled with, so I appreciate this. Amanda says, I have a suggestion for the person looking for a book where a married man discovers / explores his bisexuality. It's called Common Goal by Rachel Reed. It doesn't fit all the asks, but I think it's close. It's a romance centered around a retired hockey player who starts to date men after his retirement. He is bisexual and was previously married to a woman who I believe he's still on good terms with. Since it's the third in a series, there's also a nice community of mostly closeted gay hockey players that pops up occasionally. The whole series centers on male-male pairings, but I think this one comes closest to what the person was looking for. Note that there are several several explicit / open door sex scenes, since that's definitely not like Heartstopper.
Sure not.
Thank you.
But excellent.
Thank you, Amanda, for writing in with that. That does sound like a good option for our question asker. Okay, so now we will get to the questions. I'm going to read the first question, and then we will do a quick break, and then we will give our recommendations. So the first question is from Amir, who says, when Netflix came out with the Netflix Book Club, I promised my girlfriend that I will make her a gift box every month with the book, like a subscription. This was her birthday present. Now that the Netflix Book Club stopped giving out books for every month, I am stuck choosing the books myself. I'm enjoying it more than I would like to admit. But I need a book for October/Halloween that was adapted to screen, TV, or movie. It doesn't have to be on Netflix, but I would like it to be a recent adaptation a few years back or a new adaptation. She would like a very scary story. It can be fantasy, thriller, action, mystery, historical fiction, anything as long as it's scary, maybe not nonfiction. Please help me find the scariest book adaptation for Halloween. Okay, let us take a quick break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Vanessa. I think everybody who listens to the show knows that my scary meter is set to very low. What about yours?
Well, mine's like low 0.2. So like, I was like, look at what a fantastic pair of people to have on, you know, question where someone's like, please scare me. We're both like, hello, we are Wheaties 1 and 2. So first, I would like to draw attention to the fact that I believe someone on my street has just started leaf blowing. Apologize if that's coming through because I can't control it. But so... I had to definitely research this. I will give the full extent that this is, I have not read this book or seen this adaptation, but I had to ask friends because, again, weenie. But I got this recommendation from more than a few people. So hopefully that means it will, you know, be good on the scary meter. And that adaptation and book is The Black Phone by Joe Hill. So the adaptation apparently just came out, I think either earlier this year or late last year. It was one of the two. And is based on actually a short story. So it's not a full book, but it is, you know, a story with enough, I think, grit to be enjoyable to read and then watch. And that was published, I think, back in 2004. For anyone who doesn't know, Joe Hill is a very well-known horror writer in his own right and is also the son of someone you may have heard of named Stephen King. So horror apparently runs through the blood. the adaptation stars Jeremy Davies, James Ransone, and, or Ransone, I forget how he pronounces that, and Ethan Hawke. So got a couple good names in there. or recognizable ones anyway. And it's about the story and the adaptation about a young boy named Finney who gets kidnapped by someone called the Grabber, who's played by Ethan Hawke, who is this child abductor slash serial killer in the late 70s. So this is set in the 70s, which already just sounded creepy as heck to me. And then I went and watched the trailer. I was like, yeah, no, I'm out. Finney is held in a soundproof basement when he's taken by said Grabber. And there is this disconnected black rotary phone on the wall that the Grabber tells him doesn't work. So he's like, stay away. It doesn't work. It's useless. No touchy. And then through a series of interesting events, Finney finds out that the phone can be used for this very specific purpose. And it's to communicate with the Grabber's victims, like other victims of his. And so then he begins this process of trying to work with the spirits to basically try and escape. So again, Je suis Luini, have not seen it, but the trailer enough, I was like, okay. Like, and like, actually, I don't know, I've been scratching the itch to watch a little bit more horror by kind of like babying myself into it. This is one that, as much as I checked out, you know, 30 seconds in, like I might actually go back and try to watch it because it sounded really interesting. And this particular type of, you know, yeah, like the child grabby thing from the days of yore, especially just given all of the kind of urban legends that come from it, some of which, you know, are rooted in truth and some of which are not. It's just a really interesting angle to me. So I've been wanting to watch and read more of Joe Hill and his adaptations. So I've gotten, again, several recommendations from people who do like really scary stuff that said this is just unsettling and all kinds of scary. So I hope that works for you. And that is The Black Phone by Joe Hill.
Yeah, I will not be checking that.
The Wheaties, we ride at dawn.
I tried to read one Joe Hill book one time, and I think I got like 40 pages, and I was like, I'm out. I'm out. It's too much. Can't do it.
I know.
Can't do it.
Here we are.
So that sounds great. Yeah, so I had the algorithm pick for this one, which was interesting because there is no specific book mentioned in the question.
Yeah.
So I got to meddle a little. I actually tried not to meddle, for the record. I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to type horror novel adaptations 2022 into Google and then see what comes up. And you can replicate this on your own, probably. I kid you not, the first result that came up was a Book Riot post that we have.
Can co-sign.
Horror adaptations. And so I was like, oh, that's convenient. So I just basically picked like the first book from that post because that's where the algorithm pointed me to. So you get the double bonus of the algorithm pointed me to a human recommending books. And so my pick for you is Ju-On by Kai Ohishi. And this is, I mean, listen, just the cover of volume one alone is enough to send me running for the hills. It is a creepy child staring at you. Horrifying. And it is translated by Joe Swift. It is about a senior citizen outreach volunteer who goes to help out in a house in like this very quiet residential area, like should be all normal, right? Not so much. And the house is like haunted and violent, and terrible things are happening. And it sounds, I couldn't even bring myself to watch the trailer. I'm not gonna lie. It sounds very scary. And it is streaming on Netflix, so double bonus. Like it's all there for you. And it is a relatively recent adaptation and it looks terrifying. So, you know, enjoy. So again, that's Ju-On by Kai Ohishi.
I was trying to mute myself, but that was great.
Thanks. This is my gratitude that I got the algorithm for that one.
This section should just be called Love That For You.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Anyway. That was fun. Well, yeah. I'm going to read us our next question, which is thankfully a departure from the scaries for both of us.
Yeah.
So this question is, my friend is trans and non-binary and is dealing with parents who like to say they're supportive, but continue to dead name and misgender their child and then complain when my friend asks them to do better. I've been asked to help the parents understand how to do better since they seem unwilling to listen to their own child. I've known the family for ages, so I do feel okay doing so and have some good resources of my own, but I was wondering if you know of any books geared towards helping people be better allies to trans and NB folks. Anything would be great, but I'm thinking nonfiction or a memoir would teach or reach them best. Signed, Alexis, she, her. All right, Jen, what did you come up with as the human?
Yes, yes, yes. So I mean, I'm just so sorry for your friend, Alexis, first of all. That's really frustrating and rough. I'm giving them a book that I recently picked up actually as like something both for myself, but to have on hand as a potential resource for people who are, you know, struggling to do the support thing. And I feel like it's really solid. It's Seeing Gender, an Illustrated Guide to Identity and Expression by Iris Gottlieb. And so it's really, first of all, this is a beautiful book. It is literally illustrated. It's not a graphic novel in that there's not like panels of stories going on, or graphic nonfiction, rather. It's not a novel. It's nonfiction. But it is like beautiful full page illustrations that are paired with text. And it is organized such that it would be helpful for anybody who is trying to like get more language for themselves about how they're feeling in their bodies. Or, you know, it is, I think, also very useful for people who want to understand others better and, like, make the right choices in, you know, respecting pronouns and learning to, like, un-internalize all of these gender norms that we were taught as children, because that's the thing that I really am still working on. I, you know, my brain wants to still fall back on these old rules that I was taught about, like, when somebody's wearing this or when somebody has this feature, it means X gender. And, like, that's just not necessary or true. And so I think the visuals can be really helpful for that, because Gottlieb includes, like, you know, here's a full two-page spread of a bunch of people who look super different. All of them identify as non-binary. Like, you can literally train your eyeballs to start seeing gender differently. And I think that's super valuable. And there's fun, like, facts about biology in there or historical expressions of gender. And it really, I think, breaks down all of these, again, like, internalized norms that we've been taught that, like, oh, no, this is how gender works. It's like, no, it hasn't. It is fluid. It's a universe of expression. And there have been lots of different ways of people expressing gender throughout history, and it's not anything to do with biology. So I think it has good information. It's really well put together. It's beautiful, and it's very accessible. So again, that's Seeing Gender by Iris Gottlieb.
Okay, so for me, the algorithm, I was trying to switch it up and maybe use a different thing every time, sort of. And I ended up going for Goodreads on this round. And I was trying to figure out how best to approach it, because again, there's not like a specific book competence. This is, you know, just asking for resources. So I'd kind of played around with what to look for. I remember looking up, I think, gender identity and then transgender studies or like gender. So this is the part where I, again, confess that I could have maybe just stopped at the first and like picked the top book, but it just, I was trying to get a little bit specific if I could. I ended up landing on the transgender studies one. Seemed like it had some of the more relevant picks, and I will fully disclose that I skipped over the ones that were more like really thick histories of what it's like to be trans per se, and looking for something that was more of a, again, like that could be a resource. And I ended up with a pick that I actually really like, and that is Beyond the Gender Binary by Alok Vaid Menon. This is kind of the opposite, maybe, if you're picking that it's super, super short. It's actually part of a series called the, I think, Pocket Change Collective.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are these, you know, little bite-sized books with, you know, big ideas from activists and artists. And so this is one of them. I think it's like the fifth in the series. And so Alok is a gender nonconforming comedian, poet, author. They are one of the most So eloquent and articulate are often a word I want to say that are used to describe people of color in like an offensive way. And I myself have been the subject of that. That's not how I mean this. They just have this absolutely phenomenal way with words and in getting like difficult subjects, I think, to like a really digestible form, which is really quite useful in this particular book where they are trying to get folks to, again, move beyond the gender binary and say, like, look, this, it can really be this simple. And it again, I think this is going to be good for the allyship angle. It's also really illustrated. It's not like super academic. It's just sort of challenges readers to, like, again, look beyond the binary and to understand that gender is quite literally a thing that, you know, we've been ingrained, as Jen talked about earlier, to see in these very black and white terms, and that it doesn't need to be that way, that it can be the most pure and wide open form of expression available to you if you choose to embrace it that way. And because it is, you know, this pocket size, I think it makes it uniquely, again, really digestible and might be good for, like, the parents of your friend, who, again, I super apologize that your friend is going through that, because that is just the worst. It might help to see something that is a combination of illustrated, really beautiful, really beautifully put, but that's also, again, kind of like easy to do in like one sitting sort of thing, as in like, look, it really can be this simple if you want it to be. And again, you can look up Alok if you want to provide them with other resources. There's tons. I mean, Alok is like a speaker, so they have all kinds of series online from TED Talks, just really awesome interviews. And I swear every like third sentence of theirs is a thing that I end up wanting to write down because it's just so impactful and like big. But again, to convey what I think should be and hopefully someday are more simple concepts that, you know, we don't have to complicate. So yeah, I really actually enjoyed this pick. So that's, again, Beyond the Gender Binary by Alok Vaid Menon.
All right. Let's see. Our next question is from Jamie, who says, I loved the hike. I found it to be a very unique experience that combined horror with mystery and adventure and fantasy and deep weirdness. I loved it, but I haven't been able to find anything that hits quite the same way. I wonder if you can help. Vanessa, this is, you are the human.
I am a human. So this one was like one that I did definitely find challenging in that I was like, okay, so how do I, yeah, it's just such an awesome list of traits. It's like, how do you find a book that like necessarily embodies all those things? I obviously, you know, kept the book that you mentioned in mind. And the first thing that came to my mind is ultimately the one that I just stuck with because it is to me a combination of all those things, you know, horror, mystery, adventure, fantasy, very deeply weird. And that's Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. It almost feels like a cheat to use this. So Gideon the Ninth is the first in the Locked Tomb series. And like lesbian necromancer space opera is just, it's what you need to know. Like, it's just so much fun. And I it's hard to distill this book into like a small description or the series, but so there's a whole like literal, you know, was a dramatis personae in the beginning of the book so that you can get to know all of the many characters you're going to meet. There are them, these nine houses, and, you know, it's going to take you a bit. Like, I had to go through and look at that several times when I first started this book to like remember who everybody was. Gideon got to this ninth house and as an orphan, basically, and has kind of been taken in, and I use all the air quotes here, by the ninth because she's essentially kind of an indentured servant. And in, you know, there's this giant emperor that like lords over all of the houses, and he has summoned contestants and their like cavaliers from all these houses to go compete for this place as his immortal side, which to me actually sounds like a punishment, but sure. And so Gideon doesn't want to attend, but through this interesting series of events that happened at the beginning, she's essentially strong-armed into doing so by Harrow Hark of the Ninth House. She chooses her as her cavalier, so now Gideon has to, like, go compete against her will. And it is just, it's snarky. It's so snarky. It's really funny, and I think I ended up kind of honing in on the book because of the mixture when I looked up the hike of all the things you asked for, plus, like, lots of humor and cursing, yeah. And there is all of that in Gideon. Like, all of that. It's, you know, they're exploring, there's a haunted gothic space palace. Like, again, the snark is there, the humor, there is a mystery that you're kind of like getting at, and it is like, again, creepy in other way. I find it such a great, and it was actually a series that I ended up picking up because I told Jen one day that I needed something that was just going to shake me and make me throw the book at the wall. She was like, oh, then duh, Gideon. And she was not wrong. So I cannot wait to read the rest of the books in the series because I'm very behind in Book Riot, you know, speak on this series that everyone loves. But I think that might fit the bill for you. So give it a try. And that's Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir.
Yeah, I'll co-sign that. I am caught up with the series, and all I can tell you is that you are not going to want to stop throwing the book at the wall.
Excellent. Look, I've been wanting that, so that's fine.
So wild. Such a ride. I have more questions now than I did when I started out three books in, which is saying something. So good times. Yeah, so this is actually, you know, Vanessa, you honed in on something that I feel like the algorithm could not quite account for. So, you know, The Hike by Drew McGarry. Yes, it's like, you know, all of the things that Jamie said, you know, horror, mystery, adventure, fantasy, deep weirdness, and funny. And the algorithm that I used Storygraph. I love Storygraph. And I limited myself to the first page of results. I did not let myself get too far down a rabbit hole here. And the closest, none of them were funny. Like, none of them were that kind of funny, like that kind of, like, almost like Terry Pratchett-y kind of funny. So I'm really glad that you went with, you know, Gideon, which is hysterical, in addition to having all of those other elements, because my pick is not funny. It has everything else, though. It has everything else. It's just not funny.
Sure
and
does.
So the algorithm pick is Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer, which is the weirdest. I mean, it's so freaking weird. It's very strange. It takes place in an area of the Everglades in Florida that has been dubbed like Area X. And scientists are trying to study it because it has like randomly sort of become this region where it's, you know, sort of cut off from the rest of the continent and nature is doing things there that are not normal. And every time an expedition gets sent, horrible things happen to the people who get sent in. Like, pretty much all of them die of various things. And we are in the head of a biologist who is being sent out on another expedition with three other women who are different kinds of scientists to try to, like, bring back useful information and not meet the same fate as the other expeditions. It is so creepy, so strange, so, like, just, like, head-scratchy, like, what is going on? And it is not easily categorized as a genre. Like, there's some mystery as to, like, you know, is the scientific body that's sending these expeditions in actually being honest with the scientists they're sending in? There is adventure. There is, like, fantastical stuff. There is deep, deep weirdness. So if you are okay with skipping, you know, the funny parts, this is actually not a bad recommendation from the algorithm. So again, that's Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer.
King of weird, for sure.
King of weird. Just like super, super freaking weird. All right, let's take our second sponsor break.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant Rivals to Lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Luis can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So this could be us as an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode.
And we're back. Vanessa, what do we have next?
All right, next question here. This one's from Emily, and Emily says, hey, or hi. Lately, I've been really into stories about male-female relationships and friendships with long histories and backstory. Some books I've enjoyed that have had this are Every Summer After, We Were Liars, If We Were Us, Ask Again, Yes, and Girl at War. In all of these books, we get a lot of backstory and often get multiple chapters on the past. These all span different genres, so I'm open to anything, just looking to dive into a fascinating years-old dynamic between two people. Thanks. All right, human, what you got?
So I am delighted by this question, and I knew immediately which book I wanted to recommend. It's a lot like Adios by Alexis Daria, which is a romance. And the two leads were childhood best friends who had like a falling out. Gabe is the dude. He like left sort of dramatically at 18. They grew up in the Bronx. He left dramatically to go to school like far, far away and like didn't really offer Michelle, who's his best friend, our heroine, like an explanation, like just sort of like up and left and like left her hanging. And she was like, what the hell? But they had like, they were working together on this like fanfic. Like, you get these chapters of them in the past, like teenage them, and like what their feelings were about each other, what they like, their nerdy like hobbies were. Like, it's so well established, their backstory. And then you get them in the present day, where they're each like dealing with career stuff and family stuff, lots of very demanding, intense family, you know, expectations. And they end up getting reunited and have to work together, and everything sort of comes to a head. And I just love the way that you see this relationship, you know, in its like older, you know, the history, the current, and like all of the tension and conflict feels very earned. Like sometimes in romance, I'm like, if you had just had a conversation, like this would have been fine. But like the reason that they are at odds is because the thing that happened was when they were teenagers, when you do not know how to have a conversation about things. So it feels very earned and like very real world. And I just love the way that the relationship is explored in this book. It's also very steamy, FYI. So again, that's A Lot Like Adios by Alexis Daria.
I love that book so much.
It's so good.
I love it. I love their backstory. I love their banter, especially when they're like not getting along. It's great.
Yes.
Very, very authentic. At least it feels that way to me. Okay, so I did Algorithm. So this is one where I actually did Storygraph and also a little bit of Goodreads. And it's funny that they all recommended the same thing as the top book. And at first, I wasn't sure how I felt about that. And this is, again, where I was like, I don't know if this feels like the books that Emily is asking for. And then it's funny, because I was kind of going, you know, she did give several examples, they gave several examples. And then I got to the last one. So again, some of the comps were like, We Were Liars, If We Were Us, Ask Again, Yes. And so when I was looking up those titles and got the title I'm about to say, I was like, huh? And then one of the last ones they mentioned is Girl at War. I'm like, oh, actually, this book might be the perfect pick, like balance of everything you're looking for. And that's The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini. So this is a bit of an OG book. It's, you know, been around for a bit, so hopefully you haven't read it. But it does, on further reflection, again, kind of combine all of the things that you asked for, and that there is this really lush, beautiful like story between actually more than one character, but there are two characters that I think it focuses on a little bit more. You get lots of chapters in the past. It actually flips back and forth. Like, it starts in present day and then flips to the past itself during when they were kids. It's got the war as a backdrop, and there's just a lot that I think it combines from the books that you asked for. So the main character is Amir, who is a Sunni Muslim, and he is struggling to find his place in the world because of a pretty traumatic childhood for, you know, war-related reasons. So again, it opens in present day in the U.S. and then it flashes back to kind of give some context for those, you know, traumatic child events. And so that takes us back to 1970s Afghanistan. And so when he's 12 years old, he is desperate to win this local kite-like tournament. And his best friend is Hassan. He promises to help him win it. Hassan is actually the son of a servant in Amir's family's household. But the lines between the families are a little bit blurred in that they often feel more like family and or friends than this, you know, employer-employee dynamic. But of course, neither of the boys can foresee what's going to happen to them and to specifically to Hassan that afternoon. And so the Russians invade the family. Amir's family is forced to flee back to America. And so the chapters that we get, again, are kind of like a flashback between the two. And then Amir eventually realizing that he needs to return to Afghanistan under Taliban rule to hopefully kind of make sense of some of the questions that he has and the things that he left behind and all the ways in which, you know, his life was changed. It's been a long time since I read this, but the more I thought about it, again, there are several relationships, definitely the one between Amir and Hassan, but also through some of the others that are really complex and that have lots of beautiful detail that is really lushly kind of built up in those flashback chapters. It's a heart-wrenching read. It's a moving read. And I really do think that in this case, the algorithm kind of came through with something that gives you all of that friendship and also some of the other dynamics that are present in the books that you asked for comps for. So yeah, I think this actually, again, works really well. That's The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini.
All right. So those are our question-y picks. Now we get to do just our favorite two books currently that we think people should read and why. I'm going to start. I just finished this memoir and I loved it so much. It's My Broken Language by Chiara Alegria Hudes. And this was actually the like one Philly read, which was cool because it meant I didn't have to wait for it on library hold. Yep. And it takes place largely in Philly, so, like, you know, appropriate. And, oh my gosh, it's so good. Chiara is a, like, you know, she kind of famous, if you weren't aware, like, has won a Pulitzer Prize, but is from this very big Puerto Rican family that lives in Philly. And she takes us through her childhood in and around the different neighborhoods of Philadelphia and what it was like, you know, to grow up with a Puerto Rican mother and a white dad, like what her family life was like, how she felt, you know, moving in between these different worlds because she is very light skinned. And so people would, you know, sometimes treat her differently than her other family members or her mother, for example. And it's so full of family and music and dance and, you know, religion and philosophy and art. And it's just like it's got so much. It's so, oh, like I just couldn't stop reading it. It's so absorbing. It was my bedtime book and it was just like somehow perfect for that. I really, even though, like, you know, tough stuff happens in this book. Speaking of which, some content warnings for you. Animal death on the page. There are also mentions of disordered eating, child abuse, and addiction. There are a lot of things that the family goes through that are a product of, you know, being in underserved communities and underserved areas. And you know, Hudes is just, again, like, whew, such a good storyteller. It's a real amazing book. So highly, highly recommend.
That sounds amazing. I should add that one to my list.
It's so good.
I love when we show up to these shows and then end up giving recommendations to one another.
Yes.
It is great. It is a nice side effect.
Yes.
I am also like over the moon passionate over this next pick. I got to talk about it on All the Books recently, but I'm just going to keep shoving it into people's hands. This is especially fantastic if you are an audiobook person, and that is How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Angie Cruz. So this book is another, it's super short. If you are an audiobook listener, I'm one of those, I speed things up, which honestly feels like it was the right way to listen to this because the main character is Dominican and, like, you know, we Latinos love to speed up when we talk. And so it honestly felt like, no, this is how this would sound. So if you did it in print, it's definitely, I think, less than 300 pages, but The title itself is in reference to, there's a Spanish phrase that we say, like, to desahogar, which means, like, to, it's, it really technically translates, I guess, to undrown, but it's what you say when you are, like, unloading on people. Like, oh, I just need to, like, get this off my chest. But then that actual phrase is also, like, an idiom that means, like, kind of like, don't make like a mountain out of a molehill, like, don't drown in a glass of water. And the structure of this is so fantastic. So our main character is a woman in her, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on this part, 60s, I think. And it's right at the time of the recession, and, you know, like 2007, 8-ish. She's been working in a factory for, you know, decades, when that factory closes its doors and, like, relocates, I think, to, like, Costa Rica. So she suddenly finds herself unemployed for the first time in that entire time. It does have, you know, authorization to work in the U.S., but has not, like, finished her documentation. And so the way that the story is told is that it's a series of, I think, 10-ish, I could be wrong there, but 10-ish unemployment interviews, like, where she goes to the agency to, like, try to find a job, and they do the interviews to, like, see, you know, where you're at and, like, what, you know, jobs you've applied for, what you're looking for. So it's her, but it's one-sided. It's basically her, for the most part, talking to this unemployment counselor about her life. And of course, it's supposed to be very, you know, work-related, where it's like, what jobs have you looked for? What are you looking for? And, like, what areas? And it somehow turns into, you know, it's very, like, tangential runoff. And she just goes off on these bits about, you know, it's initially like, yeah, I want to work here. And the reason is because La Doña so-and-so from the city and this, and we had some cafecito. And then she kind of goes off. And through these vignettes, though, you get to see, you get to know her. You get to know her past. So, you know, she grew up, you know, in La República Dominicana, how she moved over to the United States, why she did, you know, her relationship with her ex-husband, with her son, who we know from the beginning that she's estranged from, but we get to know over time, like, the really heartbreaking reasons why that is. And then we see the part that I love so much about this, and I feel like I'm going on too much and I swear I'm going to stop, but is that she is so complex, and at times you will see her making these really terrible decisions. But it's this beautiful examination of, like, all of us containing multitudes, and a really beautiful light on, like, the immigrant experience, and how generational trauma and just so much informs, like, the way we each move through the world, and also the invisible work that people like this do in their communities that, like, maybe doesn't look like a marketable skill on paper. So I just said a whole lot about a book that's not even one of the questions. So again, I will stop, but it is so good and I need y'all to read it. And that's How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Angie Cruz.
Did you want to give the content warning?
Oh, yes, because I wrote them down and I was like, I'm just going to stop talking. So, yes, there are content warnings for this. There is homophobia, partner abuse, and some other violence. It is not graphic, but it is described in just, you know, to some detail. So it's there. And now I'm done.
All right. So my next book is a novel that I found out after I read it that it won the Booker Prize.
Yeah.
This is one of those times where, yeah, you're like, yeah, obviously. So here's what happened. At some point in my life, I put this on hold at the library and then forgot about it. And, like, a couple weeks ago, you know, you get the notification, yes, like, this is ready for borrowing. And I'm like, what is this book? Why did I put it on hold? I guess I'll read it anyway. and so the book is Celestial Bodies by Joha Alharthi. And it is, y'all, like, yes, prize winner. Mm-hmm. It's real, real good. It is under 300 pages. It was translated by Marilyn Booth. And I think this is the first book, or one of the very few books I've ever read, that was set in Oman. That's not a setting that I think I have had much exposure to. And this novel is just, it's a family story. You are hopping narrators quite a bit. We have three sisters, all of whom are in different, you know, life places and stages. And then we have Abdallah, who is married to one of the sisters, and he is, like, on a plane traveling somewhere, like, thinking back about his life. And you have, again, like, you're hopping narrators quite a bit, and they all sort of weave together in that beautiful, like, sprawling family story kind of way. The struggles, the trials, the tribulations, the joys, but honestly mostly the struggles of this family in modern and recent times in Oman. And the author, I like did a little digging around, the author talks about how, you know, she really wanted to talk about things that are taboo and are not talked about, which includes, you know, slavery. Like modern slavery is a thing that exists and that is a huge part of this book. Intimate partner violence, obviously, like, you know, the gender roles and norms are still in a place. I don't know how else to, like, you know what I mean. There's like, it's complicated. And, you know, arranged marriages are a thing. There's like a lot of, you know, repression of women in particular. There is a like homophobia. There's all kinds of issues that these folks are dealing with, especially because they are living in a small village in a rural area. So perhaps not as like, you know, they're not experiencing modern pop culture in the way that some folks might who, like, emigrated to Canada or, you know, are living in the main city, which we also get narratives from. And it is, oh, it's just so good. It's, you know, it has rough moments, but I think it's totally worth it. And if, especially if you are a fan of these multi-POV family stories, which, like, we've had so many good ones of, like, this is absolutely one that needs to go on your list. It's beautifully translated, beautifully written, highly recommend. So, I'll give those content warnings again. There's child abuse, slavery, child death, and intimate partner violence. But again, that's Celestial Bodies by Joka Alharthi. So good.
I just remember when that one won the award and I was trying to put it in a bunch of people's hands. And then I, too, like, remember putting it on hold and it took four. Like, I could have just bought it because I worked, I think, at the bookstore. Right. But I was like, you know, trying to keep things under budget and put it on hold. And like a year later, I think it came in and the hold lapsed and I just haven't gotten back to it.
That's why I was like, well, I put it on hold for a reason. And if I don't read it right now, I'm never going to get it back.
Good call. All right. My next one is much more lighthearted. It's a book that I read several years ago, but I found myself like rereading it because it's that time of year and it's so predictable. And that's Witches of New York by Amy McKay, which Jen also recommended to me many years ago.
Yeah, I was just going to say this book.
Yeah, yes. This is the Jen recommendation show. It is everything that I love. Like everyone, I mean, liking witches is not like a unique thing around these parts, but like I am a very, very witchy person in my reading and in life a little bit. And this one combines my love of historical fiction, witches, and tea. Like, and how often does that happen? So the book opens with this young woman named Beatrice Dunn is responding to this strange ad in Gilded Age New York. And the ad says, like, I think respectable lady seeks dependable shop girl. Any those averse to magic need not apply. I think I still somewhat know that by heart. And so she's not, you know, sure what to expect, but she shows up to, you know, interview for this position, and she meets these two women named Adelaide and Eleanor, who are the owners of this tea shop called Tea and Sympathy, and it's just awesome. She finds, you know, they deal in things. They, you know, make potions and concoctions, but also, you know, do tea leaves, and it's witchy. Plus the added, again, it's set in Gilded Age New York, so they are women attempting to live on their own terms, who also, though, are the victims, as the book unfolds, of some, you know, just hateful men on a witch hunt sort of thing. So the content warnings for this, I can't remember them specifically, but I do remember there being like witch hunt related violence. I want to say there is like a somewhat of a torture scene. It was never too graphic because that's a thing for me. Like, I'm not a graphic violence reader. But I am just so enamored with the book. The second one is another one that I have tried to read and the hold has lapsed at the library. So I'm going to do it as soon as I finish this reread. But it's just magical. And again, like really feminist, and it's got that cool like setting. And it's just, it kind of like, if you like practical magic, it has some of those vibes as far as like a woman opening a shop with like apothecary vibes, but also, you know, people that hate women. It's such a great book. I love it. It's so magical. So yeah, Witches of New York by Amy McKay. And I'm done.
Yeah, that's a real fun one. Fun. Especially for this time of year.
Yes.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, that was our show. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for folks who sent in feedback. please feel free to send in your own feedback if you would like to. Get booked at bookriot.com. For more recommendations, you can check out bookriot.com. All made by a human, we promise.
Yes.
You can find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. As always, if you are inclined to leave ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, wherever, we super appreciate it. We also appreciate our sponsors. And Vanessa, where can people find you?
I'm mostly on the gram these days at Buenos Dias SD, which is BUENOSDIAZSD.
And also all the books sometimes.
Yes. I can Book Riot. Yes. I should maybe mention the things I do for this site.
Indeed.
Yes. All the books, all the backlist, and, you know, generally having my hands in all things Book Riot.
Indeed, indeed. Right, and you can find me also on the SFF Yeah podcast, and I am on, where am I? Twitter and Tumblr as Jen IRL, JennIRL, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.